Picture this. You wake up one day and the world is empty. There's a hazy blue coloring to everything.
You try to piece together what your life was like before, but all you can remember are fragments of old horror movies you've watched.
That's the premise of Poltergeist, a new novel from a Wisconsin film professor who was very literally picturing those scenes as she wrote the book.
It's filled with Easter eggs for fans of classic horror films like The Thing and The Changeling, and there's some inspiration from Wisconsin landscapes as well.
Jocelyn Sapaniak-Gillies is Associate Professor and Director of Film Studies at UW-Milwaukee. Poltergeist is her first novel. Jocelyn, welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much for having me on, Rob.
All right. For years, from our WPR-centric perspective, you've been our go-to Wisconsin movie person. Now you're writing a book. Coming from that background as somebody who really is deep into film, what made you want to tackle a novel?
Well, I've actually always been a voracious reader as well. So I'm really interested in storytelling in general, whether that's visual or whether that's written. So actually, books are pretty much almost as much a love for me as the movies. But one of the things that I've been really interested in as I've gone deeper into my career as a film historian is how we can kind of bridge this gap between the visual and the written. Movies, as far as I understand them, they really have kind of infected our subconscious. They're a part of our history. They're a part of who we are. And so I was really interested in thinking about how to combine that sort of subconscious level of film with telling a story in a novel form.
So when you're writing, are you thinking, you know, how would this look? What would this look like through the lens?
Absolutely. I personally really love novels that are cinematic in scope, that give you a lot of description, that give you a lot of scene setting where you can really feel where you are. You feel immersed just like you are in a film. So for me, that definitely is something that I wanted to create and a kind of atmosphere that I wanted to provide.
And filmmakers will have like kind of a color palette either throughout a movie or to set apart different scenes or characters. And this book, a lot of it has this hazy blue sheen that kind of is illuminating everything. And it kind of comes through in the words. Did you think through again, like a filmmaker might, about your color palette and what that was going to look like?
I'm so glad you recognize that, because a lot of the genesis of this book was actually thinking of this sort of post-apocalyptic imagery that is very much located in a color. And as you noted, it's this hazy blue, but it's not supposed to be a kind of natural blue like we would see in a sunny sky or the sparkles on Lake Michigan or anything like that. Instead, it's supposed to be this kind of blue that's at the end of things, right? This haze that drapes over the world when the world is about to end. And that is really where so much of the main idea came from, was that sense of a kind of almost rotted blue that to me is very similar to the color of static on television. So absolutely, it was that kind of imagery of the color that sort of was the nascent of how I was thinking about this novel.
Now, here's a surprisingly tricky question, asking you what happens in the book, the plot of the book, because as a reader, we come in and we don't know what the heck is going on, and that emerges very slowly. And that's kind of the point, I think. So when somebody says, hey, Jocelyn, what's your book about? What do you tell them without spoiling the discoveries that you make along the way?
Right. I like to say that it's about a single figure, an unnamed woman, who doesn't know who she is, she doesn't know where she is, and she finds herself completely alone at what seems to be the end of the world. So that's the kind of general approach that I will give people. But I also want them to understand that it's about a lot more than that. It's about who are we if there's nobody else to think about ourselves in concert with? What is somebody's identity if they're all alone? And if all of humanity has disappeared, what then does being a human being mean at all? But I was also thinking about it in terms of being about how we understand religion, how we understand belief, and what kinds of promises or potentially false signals that belief systems can grant us.
Well, that's a lot to pack into what's not that long a book. You really bit off a lot there.
I did. Hopefully it wasn't more than I could actually achieve, but the book originally came to me partially from a dream image. So that's one of the origins of it, was this dream image of this this sort of Arctic outpost in an Arctic that is no longer the Arctic, an Arctic that has kind of melted. And that dream image was so provocative to me when I woke up that it was something that kind of guided the rest of the story for me. And I find that dreams themselves, they also bite off more than they can chew, right? Like there's so many ideas that come to us in dreams. And it's like, how did all of that get packed into what was probably 2 minutes, right, of actually being asleep? So in some sense, that impulse to pack a lot in comes from this genesis of the book as a dream image.
Now, a weird coincidence. The day we're talking, we've had a lot of snow. It's a warm day. There's mist. Things are melting. If you're going to film your book, today would be a good day to be out filming it, I think. Did the Wisconsin landscape help flesh out that image that started in a dream?
The Wisconsin landscape has so much to do with this book. It doesn't take place in Wisconsin. It takes place in an Arctic that has melted. But I'm not originally from Wisconsin. I'm from the Mid-Atlantic. So when I moved here, I had to get used to these massive snowstorms that were just, I mean, they're like apocalyptic when they happen. And it certainly was something that I really wasn't super familiar with being from Maryland. Over the years, that became something that I loved about the state. But it's also been something that I've seen start to go away a little bit. It was just, I think, 2 winters ago that we basically had no snow cover whatsoever. And certainly northern towns in Wisconsin that are used to a lot of recreational snow activity, they were suffering that winter. So much of the feeling of being in the north affected how I think about being in the world, and thus affected this book in general. But at the same time, that feeling of the snow disappearing and that beauty of the ice evaporating and eroding, that brings up a kind of melancholy. And that melancholy affected this book too and made me think about what I wanted the environmental collapse that's at the center of the book to really be about. That feeling of the cold that makes you feel very alone, but it also kind of makes you feel alive a little bit. What happens when that starts to dissipate?
And you mentioned part of the book is in part about isolation. Who are we when we're not out among mm-hmm. other people? And gosh, that sounds a little bit familiar too. Like in COVID, a lot of people had to figure out questions like that. They were maybe at home with family, maybe at home alone. Was that part of the feeder of these ideas in the book?
Absolutely. It's probably no surprise that the book was written in the waning days of COVID. Around 2021, 2022 was when I wrote it. And certainly, what did it mean for us to be people at that time when we weren't interacting with our loved ones, when we weren't around other people so much? We all retreated into ourselves. That's kind of like what happens in Wisconsin winters, right? We retreat into ourselves. What happens when you retreat into yourself? It can be a space of total generative possibility, right? When you retreat into your own caverns of the deepest parts of yourself, you might find inspiration, you might find imagination and idea, but you also might find real pits of loneliness, right? Real sadness. How do we then distinguish what we should take from being in those caverns of solitude and what we should leave there? What do we trust when we are only in this space of pure isolation? So yeah, COVID had so much to do with it as well.
We're talking to Jocelyn Sapaniak-Gillies, UW-Milwaukee film professor, new novel, an apocalyptic horror story called Poltergeist. Jocelyn, you've described this as a work of weird horror, which I think is kind of a subgenre of horror. What do we mean when we say weird horror?
Yeah, there's a lot of debates as to what weird horror means today. But the way that I think about it is it's horror that does not explain itself. Some very strange things happen. You're never going to get the author telling you exactly what it all means. It's not going to get all tied up. And hopefully it's going to leave you with a feeling of deep uncanniness, right? That things are just not quite right. So I would say, you know, slashers don't usually fit into weird horror. Even a lot of ghost stories don't necessarily, because we often find out that the ghosts have a reason for why they're haunting. Weird horror wants to give you that feeling of just being deeply unsettled. Like nothing can be fully explained. One of the main progenitors of weird horror that we often look to is H.P. Lovecraft, of course, with his cosmic horror. A lot of problems with Lovecraft, of course, but he certainly was good at providing that sort of atmosphere where you never fully understand what is happening. You just know it's not right. I think weird horror now is a subgenre that is really appealing for people who don't see how the world is entirely legible or explainable anymore. And that's why it's kind of an appealing subgenre for me.
All right. And Jocelyn, I've held off on one of the most striking things about the book. It's definitely in conversation with horror movies. And there are so many that the main character is remembering sort of all these different movies, from The Thing by John Carpenter, Poltergeist, of course, which it shares a title with. I should have been writing them all down. There were so many. How did you bring those movies in? How did you approach that?
Yeah, so this is also in keeping with my point that movies have kind of infected us, right? They are in our subconscious, they're in our dreams. We have completely integrated them into who we are, at least in this country. I would say that they're really deeply a part of the American consciousness. So in order to experiment with that, not just like in a class where I might teach movies that way, I wanted to give a sense of the character having these movies come up in her subconscious. I tried really hard never to name the
right
film in the book. The goal was that they would also sort of ring some distant bells in the reader's head. So as you read the description of the film, you might begin to realize, oh, that's the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Oh, that's The Changeling. And they would start to bubble up in your head, much as they're bubbling up in the protagonist's head. So the idea was to kind of create this structure of film as subconscious material. Hopefully that's what came through.
Was there a lot of film watching as you were preparing this? Were you going back and watching these movies for inspiration as to how to bring them into the novel?
All the movies that are discussed in it are movies that I find really fascinating or have thought about a lot for one reason or another. And I did think about when I was writing it, should I go back and make sure that I'm getting these details right? But what I actually ended up deciding was that would be counter to what my goal was, which was to make them operate not as the movies themselves, but as memories of movies. So I thought it actually made more sense to rely on my own memory of them, which is pretty good. Most of them I've seen multiple times, but I wanted them to have that kind of sense of haziness where you recognize it, you're not entirely sure that it's right. So it was a deliberate choice on my part.
Right. Maybe this is too meta, Jocelyn, but I was thinking while reading the book that had a lot of movie references in it, what would it be like to make a movie out of this book? And there's some weird, surreal stuff as I was reading, like, could you even film that? Could you even animate that? I don't know. What do you have thoughts on that?
I would absolutely love to see this book as a movie. I have no idea how you do it with probably with copyright problems for all the films that are talked about in it. But to me, there are scenes that I just envisioned as movie scenes. So there is this cat in it, who's my favorite character in the book. As a cat person, I know that cats are both the most lovable animals and the most terrifying, horrible tornadoes of all time. So this cat figure in it, I don't want to give too much away, but the cat tries to convince the protagonist that it's a god. And it's very mean. It's very cruel to her. It's like extremely mean. But I really just could picture this white Persian cat in my head, this really rotten, nasty white Persian cat, but that's so beautiful and has these crystal clear blue eyes. And in my head, I just loved seeing that cat on the screen of my imagination. That cat, I think, should be a star.
Now, sometimes in horror, in movies or books, sometimes it's like, you know, the horror is shocking, right? The horrible thing happens out of nowhere. And sometimes it's the kind of scary thing that keeps you awake at night. And then there's the kind of like creepy, unsettling genre of horror. And I think that's where the book falls closest to me. Am I right? Or am I hitting the sweet spot you were aiming for there?
Absolutely. It's about mood. It's about atmosphere. It's about a sustained mood. It's part of why I didn't want it to be very long, because if you're writing something primarily for mood, you can lose your audience if you go on for too long. But it's definitely more supposed to be about giving you a sense of the creeps, right, making you feel like you inhabit this world for a while. It's about taking you on a journey of absolute atmosphere, where by the end of it, you feel a little bit changed. So those were kind of some things that I was thinking about.
Jocelyn, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Jocelyn Sapaniak-Gillies, Associate Professor and Director of Film Studies at UW-Milwaukee, and now first-time fiction author. Her new book is called Poltergeist. It's an apocalyptic horror story filled with movie references. Jocelyn will do a book event at Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee on Thursday, February 5th at 6:30 p.m.